Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. I'm here in the studio today with Chris Klimek, who is a writer for the magazine of the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum.
Smithsonian Airborne Muscle Car Magazine.
Right, exactly. And Chris and I are here because, well, okay, so Chris and I have this...
We
have this history.
Been through some stuff.
And what we do is we go to loud, explodey action movies together.
We
right?
saw Brick Mansions last year.
We did see Brick Mansions together, which was a Paul Walker parkour movie.
Yeah, that was the one that came out right after he died.
Mm-hmm. We have been to the previous Fast and Furious movie together. I think we went to the Liam Neeson plane-punching movie Nonstop together.
Right.
So naturally, it was only right that the release of Furious
the Tree of Life
7, right? Naturally, it was only right that the arrival of Furious 7 would send Chris and I back to the movies together. So we're here to talk a little bit about the amazing seventh movie in this action franchise. And I think that we can both say that the sixth one, we surprisingly enough kind of enjoyed seeing, even though it's extremely silly. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. I still kind of want more, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we should set up these movies. If you are not familiar with this franchise, it's about a gang of tough people, mostly dudes, but there are some women in the mix, led by Vin Diesel and Paul Walker, also including Ludacris and Tyrese Gibson and Michelle Rodriguez.
Right. And Paul Walker, I think, started off as a cop sent to infiltrate the gang, but then he defected and joined the gang at some point.
Mm-hmm. And he, as this movie starts, he's got a wife and a young son, and Vin Diesel has a wife, but she lost her memory in the sixth movie, so that's where we start the seventh movie.
I think that even happened prior to the sixth movie. But,
oh, did it? Man, I don't think it happened in the
sixth. One of the things that's very much in the plus column for me, coming in late with six and seven, I don't know how many of the prior installments you've seen.
Just the same ones as
okay,
you, six
all
and
right.
seven.
So we are equally unqualified for this discussion. But I love that at this point the chronology is so convoluted. I think I said to you after this ended last night, we're sitting through the credits, that these movies remind me of the 1980s Chris Claremont written X-Men comics more than the current X-Men movies do, just because they're just so complicated, and like no plot twist is too soap operatic.
Yeah.
You know, the amnesia thing, the twisting allegiances, the fact that I think The Rock started off pursuing this
gang.
And now
The Rock is in it.
The Rock introduces Vin Diesel's character, Dom Toretto, to his little adorable daughter as an old friend after a dramatic pause. So allegiances are always shifting. People are forgetting their identities.
Yeah.
It's very, very soapy.
Yeah. I think the one thing you can say about these movies that is probably their greatest strength, and I mean this, is that they commit. These are not movies that are around the edges of, we want to do this, but we want to make sure it seems like something that could really happen. And this is a movie where a car can, let us say, perhaps jump from a building to another high place rather than, falling out of the sky.
Oh, are we protecting that?
I
think that's in the trailer.
Yeah, is it in the trailer?
Let's just say
it's a building-to-building car jump, which is pretty cool.
Which I it took me almost all day, but I did think of a movie where I'd seen that before.
Oh, really?
Yes, it is a 1986 car chase movie starring Tommy Lee Jones and Linda Hamilton called Black Moon Rising.
Oh, my Lord.
I saw it at a slumber party when I was like 11. It's not as cool as the one in Fast and Furious, but it is there.
I am not an omnivorous consumer of action movies or car chase movies, but if you hit the right kind, clearly I really enjoy it. I love watching these, and it's partly because we saw it with a preview audience that was like a big audience, people who are excited. They're seeing the movie for free. They're they're super jazzed. And it was so clear to me seeing this that people understand the tongue-in-cheek way in which these movies are made. I don't know whether that quality has grown over the course of the franchise, but certainly by now, there's very openly a comedic, almost bordering on self-parody of particular moments.
Yeah, and that's expressed very well early on in two places. When we're introduced to our villain, Jason Statham, who plays the brother of the villain from Fast 6. He is the Simon Gruber of this franchise.
Right, he sure is.
Bent on revenge. he has torn up a hospital to get some piece of information that he needs. And the camera sort of backs out and basically revealing that he has destroyed the hospital on his way to this one room. And he on his way out, I think he puts a grenade in the lap of this stunned guard. Mm-hmm. And then, a piece of the awning falls down as he's walking out behind it. It's very funny. And I kind of wanted the movie to stay there, which of course it can't. That's like Naked Gun, airplane level.
It is
silliness.
I will also say there are a couple of interesting things about the way that they make this movie that just from the standpoint of a person who likes to see different kinds of people in movies getting to do different kinds of things, it's worth mentioning. Out of all the franchises that I know that are super successful, I don't know that any of them have a more diverse cast than this. And kind of effortlessly so, uncommented upon. It is a cast that just kind of has seamlessly brought together a bunch of different people and has stayed that way.
Yeah.
And has kind of maintained that quality. And one of the things that's interesting to me about these movies is that they are so, like, this is, and I will use this, this is a mostly family podcast, but I will use the expression, like, this is a TNA movie, right? There is a lot of worshiping of women in bikinis. There's a lot of worshiping of kind of like very typical portrayals of women in bikinis. But then you also have women on the team who are fighting and driving in pretty much the same way that the kind of secondary guys on the team are. They're not necessarily doing what Vin Diesel's doing, but they're certainly doing what, like, Ludacris is doing.
No, there is a respect for Michelle Rodriguez's abilities.
Mm-hmm. When you're going to all this trouble of, like, actually letting the women in your movie, like, have serious fights where they seriously fight, it feels completely superfluous to me.
And it's worth noting that we only get those shots of these anonymous extras whose faces we never even see.
You know,
we're not looking at Michelle Rodriguez or Ronda Rousey that way ever.
There's a little bit of that with one of the women in the cast. At one moment, the guys are kind of ogling her as she comes out of the water.
That's right.
But it's less that. It's much more the kind of anonymous beer commercial business that I do wish it didn't have. Because I actually would stick up for these movies as a pretty fun piece of American filmmaking. And that stuff feels kind of just unnecessary and dumb to me. And it's certainly not a movie that never objectifies Vin Diesel or The Rock. If you want to go see some dudes' large chests and arms, that's also, every dude in this movie has a full wardrobe of tank tops, if that's what you're into.
Yes, the arms race in this movie is also an abs race and a delts race.
And we should certainly also mention Paul Walker died during the filming of this movie. And, I mean, I felt coming out of this movie like if I didn't know that they had to stitch a certain amount of it together using, as I understand it, a bit of CGI and also a lot of cooperation from his brothers, who I think shot some stuff where it was sort of in shadow and you can't really tell. If I didn't know, I don't think I'd know.
Yeah, no, it was very seamless. This is not, like Heath Ledger having finished his role in The Dark Knight before he died. I mean, something like half of his scenes were unshot.
Yeah.
They just had to reconfigure the whole script and work around it. And it doesn't, that's not obvious, but I feel like the sort of slapdash feeling of this film and the prior film probably makes that easier to hide than if you're operating a tighter machine.
I do think that they actually handled it pretty well. And there is a little bit of kind of tribute type stuff at the end, which I think that was actually fairly tasteful.
Yeah, I don't think it's giving away too much to say that there is a quick succession of clips near the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of striking, even though it's, we're only talking about a 15-year span.
They're so young, though.
Yeah, of course.
They all look so young. I really do see
the difference. Yeah.
Which is
and
lovely.
That's kind of moving. Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely in a way. So I think it's fair to say that Chris and I had fun at this movie. He is an action movie connoisseur who always wants a little bit more from movies like this.
Yeah, Fast and Furious has matured into its own, sort of soapy, ridiculous thing. That's what people love about it. So, I mean, I would never say, this isn't as good as Die Hard or Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like those are different kinds of action movies. I do think it's fair to compare them to, like, the Mission Impossible movies.
Mm-hmm.
Which I do think do a little better job, not a little bit better, a lot better job of just making the action kind of crisp and elegant.
I get that.
But it's still a lot of fun.
Well, full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are available every Friday on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider or at npr.org. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.